You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations Podcast. From Los Angeles, I'm Nina Concepcion. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I get to be the host, and my guest is Kale Hills, who improv fans might know from the Herald team Nomi Malone, the Maud team The Audacity, and he was on Characters Welcome. Which, do you guys have a name for that? Or is it just like Characters Welcome?
It's literally just the slogan for the USA Network.
Characters Welcome. Yes. Welcome, Kale.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure to have you here. How's your day?
Good day so far. I was running some errands earlier, just doing that, I think they call it grinding.
I was just going to say the grind.
Yeah.
That LA grind.
That's what I was doing.
So fun. Let's just get started.
Great.
Right into it. So what brought you, okay, first of all, did you do improv before living in LA?
Yes, I did. So my origin story with improv is... I started doing improv in middle school in the eighth grade.
Whoa.
Short form.
Okay.
Of course.
not long form.
No, I'm not crazy.
13-year-old.
I was homeschooled. Okay. And so one thing that my family would do to like compensate for trying to make me not turn out too weird was like extracurriculars and things like that. So I was involved with a youth theater program in the Kansas City area called Christian Youth Theater.
Whoa.
And each semester there would be a different class. So like one time I took an accent class, and it was a bunch of middle schoolers pretending to do accents. But then one time the class was short form improv. Cool. And this was right around the time that Whose Line Is It Anyway with Drew Carey was blowing up. So all my friends were like, we gotta take this class. And it was like perfect. I loved it immediately. It was so fun immediately. So I did that theater program for a few years, pretty much stopped at that point. I was like, I'm done. Cause you also did plays in that program. I was like, I'm done with that. I'm just going to do short form
forever.
So I kind of did it through high school, and then I did it in college too.
Cool. On a team? Did you have to like audition for a team in college to do
it? And I actually had to, in the youth theater program,
Oh, really?
I had to audition as well. So that was my first rejection. Whoa. 1 year I didn't make it, and I was like incredibly hurt. And then the team in college that I performed with was one of my favorite things about improv in general and short form improv especially, and also a third thing on top of that, college improv teams, is how awful the names are. So this team, I went to a school called Denison University. It's like a liberal arts college in Ohio. Steve Carell went there, and that is why I applied there. Because I'm a lunatic.
I applied to Tisch, NYU Tisch, where I went because I knew Scarlett Johansson got rejected, and I was like, I'm going to go here.
That's great. So, I think, you
really
know,
it motivates
that is, it is a good motivation, and it's also useful for, I don't know totally if this was your thing, but for me, I was like, I know I want to do comedy. I know I like, but I don't know what that looks like.
I don't know
how you do it. So I was like, I'll just pick a person that I like and then copy their choices.
Yeah, exactly.
To a degree. So the name of the team at my school is, it was my school, Burpees CD Theatrical Company, named after the Burpees Seed catalog. But
what?
In their defense, back in the day, before there were like big box stores and stuff, one thing that you could do to like grow a garden was order seeds from a catalog, and the big catalog was called burpees seeds.
Oh.
So these people were like, wouldn't it be funny if... But that's in their defense, name. It was founded in 1979.
Okay.
So maybe a hotter take at the time.
I like that they didn't change it, though.
Yeah.
Just keep it.
Yeah. I do love that it's been running the whole time. Yeah. It feels cool to be a part of something with like a little bit of a tradition.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So that was short form,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And did you know that you wanted to like move out to LA? Did you know about UCB, that it existed like when you were in college?
Like kind of in a really vague capacity. I did kind of the same way in which I found my college is kind of the way that I stumbled into UCB, which was I knew so... For comedy, it's like you have a few options. You have New York, Chicago, or L.A., and I hate moving.
Right.
So I was like, I don't want to go to Chicago and then ultimately have to leave. So I was like, I'll give L.A. a shot. And when I moved to L.A., I truly thought that I would just, like, do stuff at the Groundlings. Because that was the theater I think I was a little more familiar with. But then when I got here and was, like, looking at what to sign up for, I was really into Parks and Rec at the time, so I was like, I'll just like Wikipedia everyone on that show and like see what, and obviously that show, most of them have like direct UCB connections, so there was something there. And then also the theater was closer to my house, so it was like a perfect storm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I signed up for, I moved here in 2013 and I signed up for a class a week after I got here.
Literally, I just told Matt that I didn't have an apartment, really a car or a job, but I was like, I gotta sign up for 101.
Yeah,
with
priorities.
UCB. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which in retrospect, I feel like, I don't know if this is, if you can speak on this, but it like changed the trajectory of my life in LA, like deciding to do that. And did you know like you wanted to do, did you come out here like act and perform? Because you write as well, correct?
Yeah. I think that's been something that has been really useful about UCB and just like having a community in general and getting to try so many different things is like what you view yourself as and what you're trying to do coalesces a little bit more over time. So I think I've like really gravitated more and more towards performing and acting, whereas initially I think I was just like, I like movies.
Yeah.
Put me near a movie.
And then you've been on Harold Knight for 3 years, right?
Yes, this is my third year.
Gotcha. And what was it? Did you audition just once and then get on immediately?
I auditioned for Harold two times. The first year that I lived out here, I was a maniac because I didn't know anybody and I didn't have anything going on in my life. So I just like took every class that I could with like no gaps. I went to every show I possibly could.
Yeah.
I went to every jam that I could and was like sat by myself and watched shows and was like, this is awful. I like started a like a journal. I was like, I'm going to track my progress. I like found a journal and I was rereading it recently. And I was like, oh, I think I was depressed at the time and I didn't know it.
Undiagnosed depression.
Yeah. So I intentionally blew through the program. And while I was in 401 with Julie Brister, I auditioned the first time and didn't get on a team. And then the next year, I auditioned for the second time and was placed on a team that year. And that was really fun. That was fun circumstances because at the time I was in advanced with Will Hines, and it was like I think like half of the people in the class made it onto teams that year. It was like a perfect dream team scenario.
I want to talk a little bit about, so you were like obsessed with UCB and going to shows, because I love, so do you consider yourself like kind of like an improv nerd, like you love like watching it, performing it? Because I feel like there's people that do it to like, you know, they're like actors that their agent told them to do it. And then, you know, other people that like love, I want to talk to like, why do you think you went to so many shows and like, why do you love performing improv?
I think that, like kind of connected to your questions about like when I moved out here, what did I want to do? I would say in a weird way, improv has been like one of the only kind of constants in my life. And it is the thing that makes me the happiest. So I always, and I still do view it as like part of what I would like to have like a meaningful connection to a career. Like I'm not a total purist in that. I'm like, I never want to work. I only want to do improv. But at the same time, I remember, especially in that first class I did in eighth grade, I was like going through puberty, and my voice didn't change as soon as everyone else's. So there was a year that year of middle school, I like just wouldn't talk.
Right.
I was so embarrassed to talk. I wouldn't raise my hand in class. If I was called on, I would like try and avoid speaking as much as possible. And then there was something about being in doing improv where all of that went away. And not only did it go away, but people it was fun. People liked me. And so I think it was honestly the first space that I felt like really comfortable in. And that has been that. I think that's why I've kept coming back to it. Is like the community and the atmosphere that it has been for me. And then also, I don't know anyone. I dare anyone who's listening who's never done improv, which that person doesn't exist.
Exactly.
But anyone who does improv has to fall in love with it because it's like pure instant gratification, pure collaboration, pure creation. It's like the high. We're all just chasing that high.
You really do, and it becomes addicting.
I think so.
I was kind of thinking about this recently, like. I think we all kind of like overanalyze maybe bad shows that we have, but I remember more. You have those feelings of like where you feel like a rock star leaving the stage and you're like, I can do anything.
Yes.
And it kind of eclipses the shitty moments, you know,
that
you
absolutely.
Have. So Matt asked me a question because Dave Tooney before him asked him. So I'm going to ask it to you.
It's a good
question that I like specifically regarding like Harold Knight and being on a team. For 3 years, I guess, like, what is something about yourself that, like, when you got on Harold Knight that you immediately were like, oh, this is, like, something hard that I need to, like, work on and maybe that you didn't notice before getting on Harold Knight? And then something that you feel like you've really grown and can feel very confident in performing-wise on Harold Knight, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah. So the first part of the question, like, what was something where I was like, oh, this is hard? I was, in a lot of ways, I was really lucky because my first year experience was on a team of, like, mixed skill and experience levels. My first team was, like, half new people. And then, like, Jessica McKenna and Jace Armstrong and Marissa Strickland and, you know, the, like, super-duper vets. And they did such a good job of taking care of us. So one thing that I think I realized through that experience was even though I felt like, pretty confident in scene work and, like, my point of view and sense of humor, I realized I didn't really have a strong grasp on how best to use it in a show or how to use it to take care of other people in the way that they were taking care of me. So I was like, yeah, I can do a scene, I guess. But if a scene goes poorly, that's not something that I have a lot of experience with, like course correcting. And I didn't have a lot of experience in being like the leader when the team needs a leader to help direct the show. So I think I just realized the gap between not that I was like super cocky or thought I was hot shit when I was placed on a team, but I think I realized how much, just in general, how much I still had to learn. And grow. And then also there is that thing that people say of like not related to scene work and stuff like that, but And you pretty much only hear it from people who are on teams, which is shitty, but it is true. Like, being on a team doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
That's true.
And getting on a team is the easiest way to realize that.
Exactly.
Because you get it, and then you look around, and you're like, oh, this is good, and it does, like, give me a lot of things, but it's not it's just one thing.
Exactly. And I also feel like you shouldn't, if the only reason you're doing improv is to just like get on a house team or something, or just like be a part of, I don't know that that's like necessarily the right reason to do improv. I think it starts from a place of like, I love performing and creating something out of nothing with people.
Yeah. Cause you're just, you're going to hate like, so right now it's like coming up on Herald auditions in LA. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're running into this with coaching and stuff too, of every once in a while, I'll coach someone in a audition practice group who will say like, who will literally say, like, I don't like doing Heralds, or, like, I feel like I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah.
And so I always get really – I weirdly – someone – I ran into someone I used to coach the other day on the street, and she was like, I'm not auditioning. I do stand-up now. And I was like, yes!
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, yes, take ownership over your choices.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, great. If not, fine.
Exactly.
You – and this person, I'm like, you would probably be great at stand-up.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense to me. So – So that was a big thing I learned initially. And I think so the other part of the question was like, what's something I'm very confident at now?
You feel like, exactly.
Walk-ons.
Really?
I love it. My like my dream show is like either just group games or I do nothing except walk-ons.
That's so fast. Because walk-ons are literally the bane of my existence.
Really?
It's what gives me anxiety. And always, since like, since we first learned them in whatever level you learn them.
Because you feel like you're like supposed to be doing something.
I think when I realized, when I first learned them, I didn't understand like it's supposed to like move the game forward or like add something, you know. Like,
gotcha,
essentially, I would just like come on, say a funny line and then leave. And like, that was great.
Yes.
But I think when I realized like, oh, like I want to make sure, I think I'm so scared of like just adding nothing or like not moving the game forward or the scene that I like get stuck in my head and then I'm just scared to do it at all.
Yeah.
But it's something, I don't know. What about walk-ons do you love doing?
I love, there is a selfishness to it, which is like usually when you're doing a walk-on, it is either like a game move or something like that's directing the scene a little bit. And I guess I would go, okay, I'm going to say it. I think that is a strength of mine, is like being on the outside and kind of seeing what's happening and then being like, let's do this. Wouldn't this be fun to do? Let's go for it. So I love that. And then it's also, I think what I like about it is, especially on a team like Nomi or probably like same on Zuzu, obviously you guys love each other. Mm-hmm. I just love watching my teammates and then not having to, when I do a walk-on, it's usually not because the scene needs it. Mm. It's because it can be a little flourish. Like, they're already doing so well, and I get excited, and I'm like, how can I, is this, let's, me too?
Yeah. I like thinking of it that way is, I think, less pressure, too, because you're not, like, really changing the scene much. You're just kind of like lobbing up something for them to make them look even better.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's like blowing out I love like blowing out worlds and making scenes like feel a little more textured and specific. I just get a little tired of seeing or doing, you know, talking head scenes or.
Sure.
Or even, like why. To me, a Herald team, Herald night, I love slow, intentional, like two-man stuff.
Yes.
But if you have a team of eight people, why not use all the brains?
Exactly.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, you're super involved in also the sketch community at UCB. How has that affected your improv? Do you think it has at all?
What if I was just like, no, they're unrelated. What are you thinking? How has it affected my improv? Well, this is something that I probably should have been like reflective about prior to this point. Cause that's a good thing mm-hmm. to think about. So I think that it's really helped me with I have a hard time with like not going for jokes. And I think one thing I was thinking about literally last night at Maud was Bombardier did a sketch that was like, honestly, from the second line, you just kind of like knew what was coming. And mm-hmm. that's not a knock on them to say that they wrote like an unsurprising sketch. Mm-hmm. It actually, I was like, oh, this sketch is perfect mm-hmm. because you're just telling the audience what you're going to do mm-hmm. and then you do it mm-hmm. and you have fun with like how you get there. So sketch has really helped me appreciate that like the reason game is good and the reason that game is useful is to like mm-hmm. get the audience on the same page as you, same page as your teammate, and it just streamline everything. Mm-hmm. And you can still, and then the nuance and everything and texture can come on top of that. So it's helped me in that way. And then also, I think in my experience, and maybe this is true for a lot of people, one thing that's tough about improv, and I think about like UCB and game mm-hmm. style improv in particular, is like switching between modes, mm-hmm. like switching between your writer brain and your performer brain.
Yeah.
So doing sketch and being an actor on Maud has specifically been really fun to just totally separate them and be mm-hmm. like, in one meeting, we're in like writing mode
yeah.
and focusing just on the idea. And then by the time the show is ready to put up on its feet, you don't have to think about that at all. And you can just focus on the performance and commitment and what that looks like.
Yeah.
And that's hard to, I think that's just harder to get that like focused practice in
yeah.
improv because you're being asked to do both at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if, because I always think of like you're basically writing scenes when you're doing improv. Whenever I have to think of like a character, I always go back to improv scenes where I've like really mm-hmm. felt good about that scene, or it's really landed, or a
yes.
coach has been like, this is you did great in the scene. It's like, oh, well, that could be a character that I do.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
They're very closely related.
Yes.
Are there any forms that you just love and could do all the time? You said you like patient, like two-man play.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I mean, truly, I love it all. I think that I already said this, but like my ideal show would just be group games.
Definitely.
But as far as forms, when I was like first coming up, I was on an indie team that did like a La Ronde into a montage. I missed doing that.
Mm.
That was really fun.
That
and I've always,
cool.
oh, you know what? I've never done, I'm always the person who's too ambitious. So when I was in 101 and, I was in 101 and I was like, let's have a practice group. And everyone else was like, what is that?
Yeah, what is a practice group?
And then, and I got like Joe Wenger to come to my apartment that literally just had a couch for it. And I was like, who is this man and why is he charging so much money? only later to realize he's maybe my favorite improviser or like very much up there.
Yeah.
And then everybody showed up and I made... I had made cookies and lemonade because I was like, I need to be a good host. And then this was like, I also just when I had moved to LA, so everyone came and was like, I'm not on sugar right now.
No!
I was like, what?
Welcome to LA.
What does that mean? And so then Joe Wengert showed up and I was like, I'd like to do an evente, please. And he was like, no.
We're not doing that.
You can't. So that's what I get excited still. This isn't a specific answer to the question, but I get excited
sure.
about like the new forms and like
yeah.
new ideas and thinking like, how can we push what we're doing?
Yeah. That makes me think of, I mean, your opening with Nomi is something you guys like created, right? And like,
kind of. It was, so we do an answering machine opening, which was originated by a team called Sentimental Lady out here in LA.
Cool.
Which is like Johnny Meeks, Joel Spence, Susie Barrett, and
huge.
Five other people that don't matter. and so it's people leaving voice messages, and what they would do is they would do like beats. They would do kind of like call and response of the messages and use that to like clarify game and stuff. But we, the way we do it, we do have, I guess, our own spin on it, which is just like more of like character monologues.
Yeah.
So we kind of stole their format, but for our own. And
right.
then we were like, we're just going to empty out the pool and put our own gross water in it. Great metaphor.
What's up, podcast listeners? It's Nate Russell. I'm here to tell you about another podcast on this UCB Comedy Podcast Network, my show, the UCB Digital Podcast. I bring on writers, directors, editors, actors, producers, and get the inside scoop on what's happening in the world of comedy filmmaking. It's like a fancy Hollywood networking party, but instead of having to actually socialize, you just sit back and put your headphones on. There's new episodes every single Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Hey, improv fans, if the suggestion for your next show is beer, maybe initiate your scene with something like, check it out, they've got Bronx beer on tap at this bar. It's the start of a great scene, and ordering a Bronx is a great way to start any night out. And Bronx is now the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information, and be sure to make your next pint a Bronx. And scene.
Well, what I love about it, because it kind of reminds, we created, kind of like created, same thing. I think our opening, our new one for Zuzu, maybe was something, but we kind of like made it our own.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, kind of like, it's like still like performing. Like it's not like a living room where you're just like talking.
Yes, yeah.
But it still can start from like kind of a grounded place. Like, and
yes.
It can get zany and crazy. But I kind of think, and I don't, if you... You know, I don't know what you think about this. I'd love to hear. Is like, I think for Harold, sometimes it's better to start from like a grounded place.
Yeah.
Rather than like zany. I would even prefer. I had Dan Black was our last coach, and he was always like, I kind of love doing openings that aren't funny, like not
yeah,
even going
yeah.
for jokes at all, because I think you can get a richer premise and like have a richer show almost.
Yes, absolutely.
You know?
I feel like, honestly, I feel like there is probably so much overlap between Nomi and Zuzu in terms of just like team, I don't know, like tone and texture.
For sure.
Because thinking about your opening, which is so fun to watch, something that I love about it is I feel like there are people on your team and there are people on my team who like just can't help but be performing. So they are not going to be able to do, they need to like, do something performative and and creative. So the like character painting that you do is a great way to do that, like you said, in a more managed way that is starting closer to a grounded place. And that is very much what we have had to work on as a team and has been the way we've been noted since we got put together because and again, I feel like this is probably very true of Zuzu. It's easy for us to do the doggy pile and get to the zany high energy place.
Yep.
So we just have to be very intentional about like if you start there, you're gonna like run out of gas and end up on the side of the freeway.
Yep.
So so being very intentional about like simple, grounded, build the foundation of the house first so that then it can be whatever you want on top of that.
Yeah. And I think when I first got on Harold Knight, I think I was like so focused on, I just want to be funny. I just want to be good. And like, I want to show people that I earned my place here. But then you realize like the form of a Harold, it's like you can't start from that crazy zany place and sustain it. And it kind of makes you a better improviser in general because it's almost like you can't be afraid to have a, like a slow, patient first beat that might not get laughs.
Yeah.
But it'll pay off later, you know?
Yes, yeah. I think that's the danger of Harold Knight, especially because you're used to, you grow accustomed to this audience that is so specific. It's the most specific audience I've ever performed for, where people are like
taking notes
and like they get excited about the form and there's like a weird energy to it. So being okay with not, again, for me especially, not going for the joke so that the ultimate payoff can be better.
Was that, did you find that hard from having like a short form background? Like when you started doing like going through the program and was there any like?
I think that my relationship to short form and how it's helped with long form is kind of cyclical. Like when I first started doing long form, it helped so much. Mm-hmm. Like to the extent that I kind of believe everyone should do short form first, because all short form is like scenes where you're focusing on one thing and the game is literally said out loud to everyone. So it's like, this is the emotion game or something like that. So the concept of game wasn't really that surprising. It was like, oh, you just find, instead of being told what you're going to do and being told what pattern you are playing with, you find your own. That made a lot of sense. But then over the course of time, and once that usefulness wore off, it did become trickier to honor what's great about long form more, which is like all the things you were just saying.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
As we start to wind down, I want to ask a few questions. Was there ever a moment, or do you remember like a note or something that you were given that you were like, that kind of like changed, that were like, oh yeah, it maybe like kind of changed either the way you performed from then on out?
That's very easy for me to think of.
Yeah.
Probably the most useful note I've ever received was from Trisha McAlpin in my 301. Did you have her as well?
I had her for 101 and she's like amazing.
Yeah, I loved learning from her. She was great. Yeah. She told me, choose to be deeply affected. It kind of goes back to that, like, tendency to get stuck in either one brain or the other. So like, how do I pull myself out of when I'm in that writer brain and I'm not like committing emotionally as much as I can? Just the idea of, the characters in the scene as real people that are meaningful to each other, what is the impact upon that person? And then everything else flows from that so naturally. So just that, and I think what I loved about that note also was it meant that she saw it in me and was like, here's how you get to that.
Yeah.
So that made me feel like, oh, thank you. For telling me how to do it instead of saying, like, you should be more emotional or your characters should be, like, bigger by the end of the scene. I would be like, so I just start screaming?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
What do I do?
But she was like, no, this is how you do the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's huge because I think sometimes improv can feel very detached, or, you know, I find myself doing it where I'm like, just like very aware I'm doing improv or above it. And no matter what, like those scenes always feel like they die, you know, when you're not just like present connecting to your scene partner.
Yeah.
I think we kind of forget that it is like, we're in a theater, we're performing, like we need to be connected to who we're with.
Yes. That's a huge thing I'm always noting indie teams on and literally saying like, this is theater. Remember that stuff.
Yeah. It's something I think one of my coaches told me that, and it was like, it was kind of like that same moment of like, yeah, like we should be performing and trying to have real emotion in it. Is there any advice you would give to people that are, not that they're just starting out, but maybe like this is their first year auditioning for Harold or they're, you know, going through the program?
Yeah. I guess a couple things that have been useful to me is like, if you feel stuck in your improv, that's usually a sign that you're growing because it means you're aware of the gap between where you are and where you could be. So as much as it hurts and is not fun, it's a positive sign because that's like, you know, awareness is the first step. So that means that you're probably on the right path to growing. And specifically with auditions, I'm big into the idea that, like, the improviser you are is the improviser you're going to be. Mm-hmm. So instead of focusing on, like, what are my weaknesses? How can I fix these before auditions? Like, sorry, you can't. You're not, right. You're not going to be able to change
right.
that before auditions. And honestly, maybe even never. Everyone's going to always have the same, like, mind and tendencies. So I think instead, like, celebrate what you're great at. And I think the reason I got on a team between the two auditions that I had was the first year I went in and I had honestly a good audition. I hit like game and stuff.
Right.
But I don't think it was interesting in any way. Mm. The second year I was like, if they don't put me on a team this year, the reason is going to be because they don't like me and they don't think I'm funny. Mm. So I just went in and was like this. I tried to as much as possible be like, this is me.
Yeah.
So,
and trusting your own instincts and that, because I think it's important to, like, you know, think about, like, who inspires you as an improviser and, like, watch improv, but also ultimately know that, like, you have your own unique point of view. And I think that's really special and important in Harold's, because there's eight people. You can't have all eight people that are, like, really good at being the straight man. And, you know, it's like you need a mix.
I don't know why I was thinking about this, but the other day I was thinking about, like, what would a team of just me look like? And the only conclusion I came to is that, like, they would have, like, the worst, most self-satisfied entrance music. It would be, like, coming out to, like, a Neil Diamond song.
Get people very hyped on that.
If there was a team of all Ninas, what would their entrance song be?
Oh, probably Tony Braxton's He Wasn't Mad Enough for Me, which is lately my new, like, I listen to it before auditions, like anything.
Yeah.
It really gets me weirdly excited.
That's great. Oh, I did that. That was another thing. I got, like, so amped. Yes, I listened to music to get amped up, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one of the last questions I'll ask. Is there anything that, is there anything that you do to just maybe if you're feeling like in your head with improv or like stuck, are there things that you do to kind of like help yourself remind yourself like why you love doing it at the end of the day?
That's a good question. And it's kind of been on my mind recently because like as good of a team as Nomi is, which I think is like, oh, pretty good. We had a really bad show on Monday. It was like a weird experience. It felt like the energy was off, and we kind of played to our worst habits. I think, or at least I'm not going to speak for the whole team.
Sure.
I know I felt that way, and I'm also going to speak for the whole team. Everyone felt that way. So a part of that was like we were kind of rushed beforehand. I know some people don't think you need to warm up, but I need a warm up because I need just like I think as an anxious person, you know, coming in and how do I leave behind all of the things that I'm carrying with me from that day?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think another thing that I have to do to reset is like stop putting expectations on shows because I have a tendency to do that and be like. Because I love it and because it makes me happy, I'm going to go do this show and it's going to make me happy.
Right.
Then like, why am I attaching my, that's a bad idea with anything in life.
Yeah.
So just like resetting and team time.
Team time is important.
Because
you're, and it's also cool. To perform with people you love, you know? I feel so lucky that...
Dang, it's the best.
It's the best.
Sometimes I feel like I have the worst backline etiquette possible because I love my team so much.
Love them.
I'm just on the backline like, ha, ha, ha.
Like laughing. And that's part of, like, the magic of Harold because it's like, sometimes that doesn't happen. You don't get on a team with, like, people that you love.
Yeah, sorry, everybody. Yeah. Like, you can't all be as lucky as me and Nina.
Kale, this was so fun.
Yeah.
To talk to you. Anything you want to plug?
What would I like to plug? I guess No. Just like that's people fine. People can figure out when Harold and Mont Knight is on their own.
Figure it out.
Maybe I'll say my Twitter.
Plug your Twitter.
Okay, my Twitter is at Kale Ethan.
Love it.
Great.
Very funny Twitter.
Thanks.
I'm going to do that outro script. I don't know if I'm supposed to announce that. And that was a long form conversation. Tune into the next episode when Kale Hills will be your host. Bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
Thanks to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all their craft beer. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx.